Hi, this is Khalifa Sabre with another episode of the Beginner's Guide to Bitcoin podcast. And in this episode, we'll be talking to Andrey Karpushanak, who's basically a cryptocurrency expert and software developer. He's also the organizer of the Crypto Marbella Hackathon, which is taking place in Marbella on the 16th of December at the Our Space Coworking, and is sponsored by Santiment. This is going to be a collaborative problem-solving hackathon for basically for novice and expert developers alike, and it's centered around Bitcoin, cryptocurrency, and blockchain technology. So if you're in the Marbella area or you can travel to Marbella, please come down on December the 16th. Okay, let's get started with the episode. So Andrey, let's start with maybe the most general question, which is, what is a cryptocurrency?
What is the cryptocurrency? Cryptocurrency is a crypto and currency. So first part of the cryptocurrency is crypto, which means that cryptography. And the second is currency, which is basically money, which is store of value or mean of exchange. In case of first part, which is cryptography, it's about asymmetric cryptography. It's about idea that you could encrypt value and you could decrypt this value when you send it somewhere. And as simple as that. I mean, I guess it doesn't make sense to go into details about public and private keys, but if we want, we could go there.
Yeah, sure. I mean, yeah, absolutely. What is a private key then, for example, and a public key?
Yeah, so idea is that because whole cryptocurrency idea started before Bitcoin, and Bitcoin is just another attempt to do something with this. Idea is that because I'm just it's not easy to explain it in simple words, to be honest. Idea is that imagine we have possibility to send value somewhere, and we have to show that this value is coming from somebody, and this person has to show a proof that this value is signed by this person, and this information is signed using private key, and only person who is in possession of this private key can sign this, let's say, transaction. And then somebody else on the other side could see that, so it was signed by this person. So it means that this second person on the other side knows that this data wasn't changed. It was signed by this first person and was received by the second one. Maybe my explanation is quite chaotic.
One analogy that I've read that I quite like, and maybe you can say if this is right or wrong, is that you have the private key is like a physical key, let's say, that only you have. And then the public key is like a lock, because a lock can be anywhere, right? A lock can be on a door, everybody can pass it, can see it, so on. So it's a bit like that, it's a bit like a lock and a key. Yeah. And the key part is the one that you have in your pocket or on your person. And the lock part is the part that everybody can see and have access to, but they can't do anything with it unless they have the key that fits in that lock. Does that sound about
right? Absolutely. Makes sense.
Okay. So we've already talked a little bit about cryptography, so I mean, and so on, and cryptocurrency. So what then are the benefits of cryptocurrency, you know, especially if you've got normal currency, dollars, euros, and so on? What is the benefit of a cryptocurrency?
In this case, the main benefit, at least from my perspective, I'm not a cryptographer, I'm a software developer. Mm-hmm. For me, the main value is that it's just a next logical step in automation. So we started with internet in '90s, I guess, even earlier, with DARPA, who came up with internet with the concept of how we can send information between entities without third parties. So let's say something happened, there's a war, and we could send between city to city or whatever, we could send this data. And then in '90s we had internet and it started booming, then we had dot-com bubble, then we had beginning of 2000, and then we had a whole bunch of new companies like Google and such. We have Facebook right now, And we have this global village kind of thing, right? So right now we can communicate with people in India or in USA or anywhere using video and such. Everything is based on internet protocols. And right now we can exchange data almost for free and almost instantaneously. You could even say that probably instantaneously and for free, right? Because you still have to pay for an access to internet, but this is negligible. This is negligible amount, right? Mm. You pay, I don't know, 10 euros, 50 euros, yeah. depends on the mm. country. Mm. So then next logical step would be not to send in, not only information between people. So let's say I send information to India or somebody from India sends information to me and I can see, I can read, or I could listen to podcasts or whatever. But right now, we are at the stage when we could send a value. When we could send a value, and before we were sending a value using a third party. So for example, you're opening a bank account, and you ask for a bank account for another person, then you send money to this bank account. So you are in possession of funds on your bank account, and then you send those funds to another person who has bank account. But then, with cryptography, we could send it peer-to-peer, which means that I could send value to India, for example, and we don't require anybody else, we don't require a third party to actually ensure that there's a value. Yeah? And Bitcoin is an example of this value exchange. So we could send... I could send something to India and this person just knows that it's there because it's on the blockchain. Everybody could test it. Everybody could verify that you gave me your wallet and I've sent you a certain amount of Bitcoins. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So for me, just to summarize, Bitcoin is just a logical evolution of the internet. Mm-hmm. So right now there's even concept of internet of money.
Mm-hmm.
So right now we could send value really fast,
yeah,
which is quite amazing, which opens a whole bunch of new opportunities for us.
Yeah, of course.
A whole bunch of that.
And that brings me on to my another question. As you mentioned one point there, is the blockchain. You mentioned blockchain. So what can you explain? What is a blockchain?
Yeah, that's blockchain is also invention. Idea is that we have computers and we have databases on those computers, which was invented probably, I don't know, 50 years ago or 60 years ago. But right now, idea is that instead of storing data on one computer, what we try to do is that we try to replicate this data on all the nodes and all the connected machines, which follow the same protocol in the same. And what's the point? The point is that it's not too efficient because it's much more efficient to send data through one node. Because this node just record data, and let's say it will record ledger. It will record that I have 5, you have 10.
Yeah.
Then I send this 5 to somebody else. So right now I have 3, this person has 2, and you still have 10. Yeah. But as soon as we'll start replicating this data to all the nodes which are connected, and which are connected, in this case, what's the point of this? That it's slower because we have to replicate this data. But at the same time, it's very hard to fake. It's almost impossible to fake, because to fake it, you need to do 51% attack, and then what you need to do, you have to add so much hash power to actually start messing with the data. Mm. It's also very... I wish I would be able to explain blockchain in much easier words, but with my developer background, that's my attempt. I'm not sure how it would be digestible for a person who doesn't have development background.
I think it should be understandable. It's, as you say, it's hard to know how someone who doesn't have your background can understand it, because you don't have their background, as it were. But you know, it's your point of view of what that thing is.
Yeah.
So then. The other thing that, I think what you've touched on is one thing, which I think is this idea of centralized versus decentralized, which is the very important part of the whole crypto space, let's say. And as you said before, you have database, which is centralized, but much faster. But the point is, it's owned by one person, one entity, whereas the decentralized blockchain is owned by no one. It's just out there, and it's thousands of nodes all communicating and verifying the information. And I think one thing that just as to go off from that point, one thing that people are maybe concerned about is and maybe you can explain this as well, is that you have the idea of mining. Especially with Bitcoin, you have miners who are making a calculation in order to verify or create a block, let's say. Could you maybe explain that process a little bit as well, how that works?
Yeah, sure. Also, it will be just my attempt of explaining this using simple words.
Yeah.
I wish I would be able to explain it in 3 words or in 10, but it's not easy, at least for me. So idea of miner is that, so we start with this computer which records transactions, right? So we started with this one machine. So let's say we're talking about bank. In a very simplistic way, they have only one database which just records transactions. So you have 5, I have 10, for example. Then as soon as we have more machines, we have to incentivize them, because it's all about, so it's about game theory, yeah? So it's all about incentives. How to make sure that new nodes are incentivized to provide a service for you, which means that to be a node, to record all the transactions. So why should you do this? Because it costs you money, right? Because internet costs you money, electricity costs you money. Mm. You do this in a way that all the miners, what they do, their main functionality is to listen to all the transactions in the network and to combine those transactions into a block, which has certain rules. So in case of Bitcoin, in case of Bitcoin Core, it's 1 megabyte block. In case of Bitcoin Cash, it's 8 megabyte block, for example. And then you have to create a block out of those transactions which conform to those very, very strict rules. And then you have to apply mathematical operations. In this case, it's just hashing of those transactions. And then I don't want to go into nonce. I don't want to go to this zero, like trailing zeros in the beginning. So let's say we have 11 or 12 or 15 zeros, which and we set a prerequisite for a hash to start with X amount of zeros. And to do this, we have to apply a brute force mechanism, which we apply to set of transactions, and we just see what is the hash. As soon as hash conforms to very strict rules, then we say that we found a block, and we just emit information to all the nodes around. We say that, oh, by the way, we were able to find, we were able to mine a block. And it's not easy. Why? Because you have to have enough hash power to find this block. And every 10 minutes, in case of Bitcoins, everybody is starting from scratch, and everybody starts mining those blocks. And whoever who wins emits this information, I found a block, sends information out, and then people start mining new block based on, and this block is being added to the chain, hence blockchain, and then we start from scratch. I don't understand, it's probably understood by person who knows how Bitcoin works, and might not be understood by person who doesn't.
Yeah. I think this is one of the things I have trouble getting my head around, is exactly how mining works. And I think for most of the people out there, this is probably one of the most difficult concepts to grasp. But I mean, I think your explanation is as good as any I've heard. So we'll go with that. I think maybe this is also a good time to talk about, you've mentioned Bitcoin. That's probably the one that everybody's heard about, cryptocurrency. Another one that is fairly significant and maybe is growing in significance is Ethereum. Can you perhaps explain, you know, what is Ethereum and maybe the difference between Ethereum and Bitcoin?
So it's easier to explain Ethereum as soon as you know what is Bitcoin. It's much easier to understand Ethereum. Ethereum is a concept of decentralized computer. So imagine, or maybe you can say the global computer. And the idea of this is that you don't store on every node only transactions, which means that I sent you X amount of value or you sent me X amount of value back, and then we just replicate this information on all the machines, we mine them, we put them to block, and then we cannot change it, right? So that's also very important. We can also say that blockchain is a database, append only database, which we append data to only. In case of Ethereum, what we do is that we still could use it as a exchange of value, but we also we could implement a small portion of logic, and then as soon as you send money to this wallet, to this to your wallet, then we apply certain strict logic, and this strict logic is being applied on every other node. So imagine it's like software which we run not on one machine but on all the machines. But what is also important, we cannot say that we just run partially computation on this machine and partially on another machine. So we're not talking about MapReduce or we're not talking about parallelization. No, we actually apply, we execute the same software, the same logic on every machine. And this, and what is so important, that the result of this computation has to be deterministic. Just to give you an example, we cannot say, give me a random number, because it doesn't make sense in blockchain. Why? Because all the operations should yield the same result on all the machines. Yeah? Which also means, if you think about this, it means that we just made a very slow computer.
Mm.
Extremely slow, but extremely reliable. Mm-hmm. Which means that, let's say we say that 2 plus 2 equals 4. Yeah? Then we run it on this machine. But then we run it on all the machines which are connected to the network of Ethereum, which is in this case about 10,000 nodes. More or less, it's 1,000 more. But the idea is that we don't want to know how much is 2 plus 2. Instead, what we want to have, we want to have an extra layer of financial services. So, for example, we could create an escrow functionality, or we could create a concept of pool payment, or we could create, for example, we could create a smart contract, which is just a fancy name for application which runs on the node.
Okay, that was going to be my next question, is what is a smart contract?
Yeah. So in this case, smart contract is just this small portion of program, so basically a set of rules which are executed as soon as you send money, you send Ether to the wallet. And you have two different types of wallet. You have personal wallet, so let's say you can have 10 Ethers under your wallet, or we have this contract wallet, which as soon as you send Ether there, then there's certain computation happens, there's certain logic happens, and this logic could include what I said. So for example, you have children, and then you say that, listen, kid, I'll give you 10 Ether to your wallet, but I don't want you to spend those 10 Ethers at the same, like, immediately.
Mm.
Because normally with normal wallets, you cannot really say that, oh, please do not spend all of this, unless, well, you cannot enforce it, right?
Yeah, once you send it, it's up to the person who receives it to
exactly
do what they like. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But in our case, what we could do, as soon as we send those 10 Ethers to smart contract, this smart contract could have a rules which we've created before, is that you cannot withdraw more than, for example, 10% per day.
Mm-hmm.
Just an example, because mm-hmm. we could do it 1%, we can do it 0.1%,
yeah,
or we can do it withdraw all the money out of it. This is just an example of simple logic, of simple smart contract, which is adding extra functionality on top of payment mechanism.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah? And then imagine as soon as you have this small, it's not much. But then as soon as you have this, then you could start creating more complex systems.
Mm-hmm.
What you have to remember about smart contracts is that as soon as it's deployed to blockchain, you cannot change it. Which means that as soon as you make mistake in this smart contract, you'll pay severely for this. That's why sometimes people say that writing smart contract is like writing smart contract for a NASA program or for a space shuttle. Because this software, you write it, you think it's correct, then it's just sent somewhere, it's being deployed to the blockchain. And then, let's say there's a smart person who found a bug in this smart contract. And this smart contract has money, so it's like a honeypot.
Mm.
It means that it just asks others to be broken.
Right? Yes.
Because it creates an incentive to be broken. So imagine how much, how confident, humble, and how... So it's basically it's combination of knowledge, combination of security, combination of preparation is required to create a smart contract. Another limitation of smart contract is that it just knows about payments. So it doesn't know, for example, as soon as we would like to say let's say we'll go with you with agreement what type of temperature will be tomorrow. So for example, if tomorrow will be more than 10 degrees in Marbella, you'll get 10 ethers. If it will be less, I'll get 10 ethers, because let's say we'll just got this agreement with you, yeah? But then question, who will decide what's the temperature in Marbella tomorrow?
Okay.
And in this case, this is another limitation, is that in decentralized environment, we still have to trust somebody. Mm. And in this case, who would you trust? Would you trust, let's say, as soon as I have incentive and I put money on the table that I'd like, I say that tomorrow will be 10 degrees or less, then...
Yeah, you can gain the system. Someone can gain the system in that way. If they know the,
exactly.
They know who the rule maker is, or the let's say the, I don't know, the person producing the data, then that's a point of weakness, let's say.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And in this case, it's still manageable. It's still manageable. There's a concept of Oracle. Oracle is the service. It's also a smart contract, which usually is provided by trustworthy entity. So for example, Reuters. Mm-hmm. Reuters is a company who is right now providing information for financial services. This is probably the main service which tells you what's the rate of Bitcoin to, not Bitcoin at the moment, but let's say USD to Euro, or maybe USD to Yen, or all those financial pairs. And in this case, as soon as Reuters would provide a smart contract with the rates, for example, with the Bitcoin to USD or Bitcoin to Euro or Ether to Euro or whatever, then in this case you can say that you've just solved the problem of how to talk to external world. Mm-hmm. But how you solve it? You still have to trust Reuters. In this case, it shouldn't be a problem, because we do trust Reuters anyway, because we still have to know what's the rate of, let's say, some asset. But then imagine, as soon as we go into more complicated scenarios, so for example, we would like to rent a house using smart contract. And in this renting a house contract, we say that, okay, I'm paying X amount of Ether every month, I pay a deposit, and after 12 months, as soon as everything is good with the house, I'd like to get my deposit back. Then, okay, let's say we implement it. And then question is, how we decide that in 12 months everything is okay with the house? How we decide that this deposit should be returned to me? Because who should decide? Because my incentive is to get maximum deposit. Incentive of a person who is lending me, who is renting me property, is to be less reluctant to give me all the money, right? Because let's say maybe I've used something or I've broken something. So then you might have this dispute. And in this case, how it's solved? At the moment, it's very good discussion, and our hackathon, which we are going to execute on December 16th, it's one of the attempts to understand what are the limitations of smart contract. In this case, imagine that when we create a smart contract, let's say between you and me, and we agree on something, and let's say after 12 months, we agree that with the deposit amount I've paid, something should happen. It should go to you, or it should go to me, or it should partially go to you and me. Who will decide? In this case, what at least at the moment, what we've came up with with Jose, for example, who is a lawyer from Marbella, my good friend, and he's saying that, and we are thinking about this, and what we could do is that we could introduce a third, let's say, player in this contract, or a third side. In this case, as soon as we won't agree between us, you and me, and we'll have a disagreement.
A dispute, yeah.
Exactly, dispute. We have to fall back into this third party, which is in this case will be some kind of arbitrage. But then you can start challenging this approach. Yeah, but what's the point in smart contract in this way? Because why wouldn't you go to normal lawyer from the very beginning? The answer for this is that normally in 90% of cases, you probably don't need this
is what I was going to. That would be my answer exactly. But this is an exceptional case where you need a third party.
Exactly.
And normally the conditions are met and agreed on by both parties, and then that's it.
Exactly. You could imagine that maybe at some point we'll have more services which will be providing you those Oracle services. So, for example, we'll have services which will give you what's the temperature in Marbella, or what's the rate of different assets, or who owns this property. But then imagine we still have to wait, or also it's also our responsibility, if we want, to create this software, to create those services. But we are still in the very, very beginning.
Yeah, very interesting points, those are. That's very, so basically, the trusted third parties or trusted data sources is still a very big issue.
Exactly. You could say, so people who are thinking about oracles, they say, how about to still keep them, obviously, but we'll just combine. So let's say we're talking about temperature in Marbella. Instead of taking only temperature from one place, we'll take maybe from three different places.
Mm-hmm.
And then we'll just make an average temperature out of it. In this case, at least we will mitigate the problem with somebody which would like to game the system.
Okay.
Yeah.
No, very, very interesting points there. So would you, I mean, and Bitcoin doesn't really have that functionality, does it? It doesn't have an option where you can actually write any programming into the Bitcoin itself or into the transaction itself?
Yes. Well, yes and no, because Bitcoin is very simple. It's very simple system. At the same time, the concept, why it's so simple, sometimes people say, let's add something on top of Bitcoin. Let's make it more. But idea of core developers is that as soon as we'll add more logic, we'll create a bigger attacking surface, which means that maybe with the best effort, we'll still we won't be able to detect all the bugs, and then somebody will be able to exploit them. Still, it's possible to, there's a concept of rootstock, for example, which might give you smart contracts on the blockchain and Bitcoin blockchain. But at the moment, I would say that it's very good that we have many competition in the area. And let's see who will win. It's a free market.
I mean, that's another point. There has been what you could call an explosion of cryptocurrencies. I mean, I think if you look at a website like CoinMarketCap, they're listing something like 1,700, certainly well over 1,000 different cryptocurrencies, and probably a lot of those will fail. But what do you feel about the idea that there should be sort of specific cryptocurrency or coin, let's say, for a different niche of use? I mean, for example, some people have talked about Bitcoin as a store of value, maybe something like Litecoin as a payment system, Ethereum as the programming language, let's say, of crypto. Do you think that's a valid point? And do you see any up-and-coming other cryptocurrencies that fill a particular niche?
It's a very good question. I wish I would know the answer. Then we would know where to invest, right?
Yes, that's part of the point, I suppose, yes.
The thing is that this is open market, and we should just embrace competitiveness, and we should just let the best service, best product win. And at the same time, you could ask, let's say, 90s, just hypothetically, you would ask, how many e-shops or how many social networks you need? Do you need more than one social network? Maybe it's enough to have only Facebook or only to Google as search engine. But then question is, as soon as we have only one, will they compete? Maybe it will be a monopoly, and then they will stop evolving because there's no need. That's why sometimes smart governments don't allow monopolies to be created, because it stops evolution.
You want the competition.
You want competition. Yeah. So in this case, competition in this space is fantastic. At the same point, as soon as you see, as soon as you look what's happening right now with Bitcoin and Bitcoin Cash, there's almost a civil war between in the community, which doesn't really help to move things forward. At the same time, maybe it's normal, you know, because this is.
I mean, that takes me to another question I have, is that obviously you mentioned Bitcoin Cash. Now, Bitcoin Cash is a fork of the Bitcoin, the old Bitcoin chain, let's say. Can you explain maybe what a fork is and the difference between a soft fork and a hard fork?
So in case of, so as we discussed, the blockchain is being governed by a set of rules, which we can call a protocol. And you cannot change this protocol unless miners decide that, okay, guys, we have a protocol version 2 and which is not compatible with the old set of rules, which means that we might create a hard fork. Which means that what we've just done, we've just upgraded protocol in a way that we all agree that we'll start accepting new blocks using new rules. In case of Bitcoin Cash, they changed size of the block from 1 megabyte to 8 megabytes, right? Plus they got rid of SegWit. So in this case, this new blockchain accepts new blocks and the old chain, Bitcoin Core, as soon as it will detect from network there's a block which is, let's say, which is bigger than 1 megabyte, this block will be rejected. In this case, you create this fork, so you basically have a two versions of Bitcoin.
Mm.
At the same time, you have replay protection, so as soon as you spend Bitcoin Cash, it won't affect your Bitcoin Core, even if because it's possible to use alt address which existed before August 1st, and let's say you had one Bitcoin there. On August 2nd, you had one Bitcoin in one blockchain and one Bitcoin on another blockchain. Mm. So you had two Bitcoins, right?
Mm.
One on each chain. So this is basically... And the soft fork, what you've asked, is the change in the protocol, which is still backward compatible, which means that you just tweak it a bit, but still all the blocks are valid, and even blocks which are created using old rules are still valid on the new blockchain. Mm. That's a soft fork.
Right? One way I like to think of it, and perhaps you can tell me if this is right or wrong, is I think of it a bit like computer operating software. So you have Mac, for example, and you have PC, and PC running Windows, or it can be Linux, but let's say Windows, and Mac running iOS, OS, I should say. And a soft fork to me is like an update of the operating system.
Yeah.
So, for example, Windows 8 to Windows 10, something like that. Whereas a hard fork is like literally is the difference between Windows and Linux, for example, or the Mac's OS.
I think it's a good analogy.
Just as an analogy.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. So, when we were talking about Bitcoin and Ethereum, now one of the things that I've been reading about with Ethereum, and one of the things that maybe is we talked about with mining, is that you have the proof of work, which is the mining, which is where you're hashing and so on. This is proof of work, but it's obviously, some people think there's some problems with that, especially in the future. We're using enormous amounts of energy and so on, and this could be a real problem. And also, potentially, the issue of miners getting too much power and that becoming a centralizing issue. So, one proposal that is happening with Ethereum is to move from proof of work to proof of stake.
Mm-hmm.
Can you explain a little bit about what is proof of stake and how it's different from proof of work?
Sure. So in case of proof of work, how it works is that every miner has to execute those mathematical operations. It's basically like in the school, you go to school and then you have to prove that you know the subject.
Okay, so like a test. You have a test.
Like
you
a
have
test.
An exam.
Exactly.
Something like that.
Like a test.
Yeah.
And in this case, in test, what you do, you calculate it, maybe it will take you 1 hour to calculate, and you came up with the result. The result, for example, is 10. Mm-hmm. Your teacher will make sure that you actually did your 1 hour of hard work, because you need to think, you need to maybe multiply, divide million times.
Mm-hmm.
This person will just check result, which is 10 in this case. As soon as it's 10, oh, nice. So this person knows. I know. So teacher knows that you spend this 1 hour. This is proof of work.
Mm-hmm.
So your result is a proof of work that I've actually done my hard work, right? But what's the good thing with proof of work is that it secures the network. It means that nodes are actually putting energy, and they are interested to keep this. To keep hold the network going. In case of proof of stake, the concept is that we say, yeah, but at the moment we spent the amount of electricity we spent to keep blockchain, to Bitcoin blockchain, I think you can find examples in newspapers. So the whole country, like Croatia, or size of Croatia, so the usage of electricity in Croatia is equal to...
Yeah.
Usage of the
Bitcoin mining energy.
Bitcoin
usage.
Mining.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy.
It's pretty crazy. At the same time, it doesn't mean that this energy is being wasted, because this energy is being consumed to make a network secure.
Mm.
So you're gonna say that this is wasted energy.
Mm.
But some people are saying, still, we could get a security of the network without miners by introducing, one of the examples is proof of stake. In this case, imagine that our nodes, so let's say our nodes don't require expensive machine anymore, what they do, they still create blocks. But as soon as they will create a block which is not valid, so let's say they'd like to game a system, they'd like to double spend, they will be severely punished. And they are punished in a way that to start mining blocks, you have to put something on a stake. So let's say you have 10 ethers or 1,000 ethers, and then you say, that's my security. That's that's the way how I will prove that I stake my amount of ethers. As soon as I'll make mistake, on purpose or not, this amount of ether will go away. Because I'll be punished. I'll be punished severely for attempting to game the system.
And who will decide that? Who is the proposed decision maker on that?
Just mathematical rules, which... so right now there's a Casper, which is protocol in Ethereum, and it's still being developed, but we are getting closer and closer. Let's say maybe it will be available in 2018, I hope. Mm-hmm. In this case... Let's see if it will work, because in this case we wouldn't need to buy expensive miners, we wouldn't need to spend electricity. We would still need to spend electricity, but not as much, much less. Right. But then you have a whole bunch of another question. So for example, you are in a pool, so let's say two of us are mining in Ethereum, yeah? And then you put to your stake 1,000, I put to my stake 1,000. And then there's another person who puts 1,000. And what those people do, so for example, you got into some kind of a cartel into the second person, and you'd like me, so let's say I'm still conforming to the rules, but you'll make sure that you will inform the system that what I'm doing is wrong, and my stake will be lost, right? So we have to also detect those systems.
Yeah, you have to look for bad actors in the system as well.
Exactly,
yeah.
which is extremely challenging, extremely interesting. And right now, the good thing that the most smartest probably people on the planet, or at least one of the most smartest one, are trying to fix it, which is amazing, I would say, isn't it?
But perhaps something I've read about recently, and maybe this is, but I still like to go down this route a little bit, is I'm reading about IOTA.
Yeah.
And they have a blockchain that they call the Tangle, which doesn't involve the same system. And do you know much about that, about the Tangle? How does that work?
In case of IOTA, IOTA's idea is that they want to create... It's not even a blockchain, it's like a next level of blockchain. Idea of IOTA is that it should work on small devices, like Internet of Things devices. So, for example, you have a door. You have a door which is opening, which could be opened and closed. And then it has a small controller which doesn't consume too much energy, but still this controller could receive payments. And then imagine that TV has this controller and, I don't know, everything around, cars, everything. Yeah. But with this approach, first of all, you have not too much electricity, which means that you cannot mine, because you'll need to have a lot of energy. And imagine right now we have issue to keep phones more than one day. And it still costs 1,000 euros for a good phone, iPhone, for example. In case of IOTA, they came up with the idea of DAG, so-called DAG, which is... So idea is that... as soon as you have new transaction, you have to find two transactions which happened already, and you basically link your transaction to those two existing transactions. You still have to do a little bit of proof of work, but not much, just a bit. And then what just happened, you had two transactions, you've created a new one, you found those two old ones, and you've created a graph. You are being this new transaction, and you've connected to those old two ones. Then imagine you have a new transaction, and then this transaction has to be linked yet to two old transactions, and it just starts growing. So instead of blockchain, you have this acyclic... you have this graph. So idea is that it's just growing and it's scalable. Yeah. Because it will scale. It will scale because it just requires two existing transactions. It will just link to those two and then it just grows. You have new one, it will find two existing one and so on. And so you just have this... It's a very interesting concept.
So just to understand, so those the nodes, as they are, so the nodes exist on the devices themselves, or they exist
exactly.
Nodes, so on the devices exactly. themselves?
Nodes will exist on devices itself, and at the same time...
But only needs to talk to two other nodes. It doesn't keep connecting to other nodes. It doesn't need to do that.
It doesn't need to do this. Yeah. At some point, as soon as you'd like to make a network secure, you'll have this swarm of everything.
Yeah.
Like, but at the same time, you have to remember about constraints in Internet of Things devices, meaning that you don't want your toaster to be connected to whole internet
all
the time. Right? Because first of all, it's expensive, maybe it's not secure and so on. Right?
Yeah.
But still, the concept is that as soon as it will find two different transactions, which will also check, are those transactions valid? Yes, they're valid. So I will secure my transaction by linking my transaction to two existing ones, right? Which is amazing idea. And if you'll see who came up with the idea behind IOTA, those are extremely, extremely smart people. And like almost everywhere in crypto industry, unless it's scam, which is also fun.
Yeah, which is another issue, absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, that's to some extent, that's something that I wanted to talk about. It's not so much the scams, but obviously scams are something that get a lot of attention.
Yeah.
And also this idea of the dark net and Bitcoin is used badly. I mean, which something I think is a bit of a straw man or a false argument, because at the end of the day, people have cash and cash can be used badly.
Absolutely.
It's no different, really. So I think this is something that's almost irrelevant. But what I wanted to talk about was government.
Yeah.
Obviously, governments and banks, to some extent, are looking at blockchain, are looking at cryptos, and trying to decide, really, are they a good thing or a bad thing. I think we see the message from most banks. We had the chairman of JP Morgan recently saying it's a fraud, it's going to end very badly, and so on. And this is pretty much universal. I mean, the one person I've seen who's... Two people really is you have the CEO of Fidelity, seems very positive with Bitcoin and blockchain generally, and also the CEO of Goldman Sachs seems to be neutral at worst, and I think probably is positive really, but is hedging his bets, let's say. And I think there's probably a lot of client side pressure to say what's going on in the space. But the question really is it possible, do you think, for governments to regulate Bitcoin out of existence, basically, you know, for them to disappear because of government intervention?
I don't think that it's possible. It's still possible for governments to mitigate or to stop or to slow down mass adoption, for sure. Because let's say governments say that as soon as you use Bitcoin, you're a criminal. It's possible because governments can do whatever they want. Right?
Yeah.
It's well,
we have seen that. I mean, I think certainly some countries have completely outlawed it, and some are basically sort of saying that you can't have exchanges, for example. China has just done that, so that makes it much more difficult.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, sorry.
So it's possible. It's possible for governments to stop this evolution. At the same time, what I believe is happening right now is that governments are also competing. Because we are in this extremely competitive world. So let's say you have USA, you have European Union, you have China, you have Japan, you have a whole bunch of countries, and they have own incentives, they have own agenda. Every country, majority of countries would like to become more rich countries, they'd like to be more powerful. In this case, what they might be afraid of is that as soon as they will stop Bitcoin, they will say that blockchain technology is bad, they will stop also some portion of this evolution, of this internet, I don't know, 2.0, 3.0, however you call it. Because imagine, just to give you an example with Uber, for example. You could say, no, we'd like to keep all the jobs, we'd like to keep all the taxi drivers, we don't want Uber here. But at the same time, the concept of Uber is that you just found a new way to... For me, for example, to go to Malaga quite cheaply. Let's say I don't want to use a bus. So, and I don't want to use a taxi for, let's say, right now to go to Malaga will cost us maybe 70, 80 euros. But if you count how much it costs, exactly how much gasoline costs, how much work of this person, it shouldn't cost as much. So then the question is, as soon as you will say that Uber is forbidden, you disallow cheaper service, which is better, to exist. Of course, you can still say, yeah, but what to do with those taxi drivers?
Mm.
It's basically a dilemma, and I don't really see clear answers here. What I'm trying to say is that it's still capitalism. It's still whoever is giving you a better product with a better service and cheaper should win.
Mm.
And then the question is, so let's say you have a post office who's saying, yeah, but emails are not good because maybe you receive email, you don't know who sent you this. Maybe you should keep, you should go to post office and you should write it on the letter.
And ban emails, yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. So post office maybe would like to ban emails.
Yeah, then we don't have Hotmail, we don't have Gmail, and the thousands of other services built on top of that.
Exactly.
Now, I can see your point very well. And obviously we have some major governments have completely embraced, to me, my view anyway, blockchain and Bitcoin. I mean, Japan is probably one of the biggest examples.
Yeah.
I mean, it's the third largest economy in the world, and they're completely Bitcoin-friendly, and I'm sure we're seeing a lot of development going on there. And as you say, I'm sure the other governments are looking at that and thinking, we don't want to lose a competitive edge
exactly.
to Japan. So this will keep the options open.
Exactly.
And then I suppose with the banks as well, they are looking to try and perhaps find their own way to embrace the technology rather than to compete with it, I suppose.
Yeah.
But that maybe leads to my next question is, do you think that idea of a centralized blockchain that a bank might want to use, can that succeed against the decentralized blockchain?
It's just my opinion, but I don't think so. I don't think so that a centralized blockchain makes sense.
Mm.
Because for me, centralized blockchain is just a database,
yeah.
which right now is already in place in the bank. So what's the point? It's just a fancy name of existing infrastructure. I don't really see the point.
Mm.
But maybe I'm missing something.
Mm. No, I think that's certainly is my way of thinking as well. Is that you may as well have PayPal, you have whatever. It's just, that's just the same.
Exactly.
What's the difference?
Yeah.
So, I mean, one thing that is be good to talk about now is what are you doing personally at the moment? What are you planning for the future? You mentioned a little bit earlier the hackathon. Can you maybe tell us a little bit about that?
Yes. So on December 16th, we have a hackathon in Marbella. Idea of the hackathon is that we'll have 24 hours. It's a bit more. We start on Sunday in the morning and we'll finish probably after lunchtime on Sunday. So we started December 16th. We finish on December 17th. Idea is that we invite all the developers, all the crypto enthusiasts, all the people who like to learn, who like to participate. We'd like to create teams. So let's say we have maybe 10 teams. Every team should have developer, should have a person who will be able to present product to masses, because usually developers are not the best people to present things.
Mm.
Because those are people who are very good in coding, for example, which is extremely sophisticated piece of knowledge, but eloquency maybe is not there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. For example, which is normal, which is okay. Everybody is different and everybody is using own edge, has own edges.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So imagine that we have those teams, and idea of our hackathon is to see what is available in blockchain area right now. So for example, I've mentioned smart contracts for lawyers, for example, in Marbella, because in Marbella, it's a famous place, it has a fantastic weather, it has a fantastic infrastructure, fantastic hotels, everything. Right now we have 20 degrees outside, it's November 30th. And idea of the hackathon is to organize competition and to see what's available, to see what kind of products people could come up with in those 24 hours. We have prices provided by Sentiment, amazing team who just raised maybe 6 months ago, who is analyzing sentiment in crypto markets. So they try to see, is the Bitcoin price right now overheated, because everybody would like to buy, so everybody is bullish. It means that probably we are the top, because there's no more potential bullish people, because everybody is bullish, everybody is saying it will go up, but then who will buy then, because they bought already, right? So Sentiment is providing two prices. It's 2,000 euros for first team and 1,000 euros for second team. And also our space, our co-working place, is providing third place. They provide 2 months of a hot desk for whole team. So whoever will win will get either money or a co-working place. So I hope it's enough incentive, because it's also game theory. It's all about how to play fair and how to make people to to understand that as soon as they will play fair, they will follow the rules, we will find this kind of Nash equilibrium that everybody is benefiting. It's like a win-win from all the points.
Which I think is one of the best things about cryptocurrency. It's something you mentioned earlier.
Because it just gives us transparency. It just gives us clear rules. And we just say, just follow the rules. And you're not a slave. You don't have to follow. If you don't like, it's fine. But usually you're incentivized to follow the rules.
Yeah, if you follow the rules, you get rewarded.
Exactly. And then imagine we start building those more complex constructs when everybody is playing by the rules, system is transparent, we could audit the system that everybody is still playing by the rules, and then we together, we have this collaboration on steroids. We collaborate with each other, and imagine we could talk about concept of synergy and such, but I don't want to use those big words because they were overused so heavily, so they become almost meaningless right now. It's like agile. Right now everybody's agile, and majority of companies are not fully agile. They just heard it, but I don't want to criticize it. Yeah. So this collaborative attempt with the transparency, with the embrace transparency, with playing fair, should create a lot of win-win strategies. So as soon as you play, if you like to play, you know that you'll be rewarded. And then imagine that we might be in position that some magic will start happening. That's the point of hackathon. Let's see. Let's see. It's in 2 weeks. I hope it will be interesting for people.
Very good. Well, Andre, thank you very much for taking the time to do
this. Thank you.
That's been brilliant. Thank you very much. Okay. Great.